Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's our Monday show, the waning days of summer. Hope you're enjoying them. We're at 312-981-7200. Are you enjoying the waning days of summer?
Waning or whining?
It starts out waning, but by the time you and I are done with it, it'll be the whining days of summer.
It was, we had a chicken party at our beach club over the
weekend.
Oh, you
had your chicken party?
Everything went very well. And it was a little cool.
Yeah.
A little cool, but I'm still not complaining. We've had a really lovely summer.
This is very, very nice. Were you able to attend the Comic-Con at all this weekend in Rosemont?
No.
You didn't go? I had just two quick highlights that I wanted to share with you. Highlight number one is I got to see somebody who I've been a fan of for a long time, Lonnie Anderson. I was very, very
did
close.
Did your eyes go boing, yo, 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 yo,
so close, and I wanted to go over and say hello, but I didn't.
Why?
But I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't. I don't know. I don't know. But it was nice to see her, and she looked stunning.
So can I, as someone who's completely outside this Comic-Con world, you know, it's not, I don't get it quite. Why was she there?
I'm not 100% sure. I think they probably have tiers of people, T-I-E-R-S, that they ask. And then it trickles down. Like, you know who else was there? Was Barry Bostwick was there.
Well, he's been in some supernatural...
Has he?
I think so, because we had him on the air when we were at Del Rey's Chicken Basket.
But not for Comic-Con. He was doing something else in town, wasn't he? Were they showing one of his movies somewhere? There were like a lot of people that I saw that I thought to myself...
It was a horror fest. He was in some horror movie.
Oh, yeah. He was in... let's do the time warp again. What is that called?
Oh,
Rocky Horror
Rocky
Picture
Horror.
Show. That's
totally
why he's in there.
So that's why he's at Wizard World.
And Lonnie Anderson was also in sort of a horrific thing. She was in a relationship with Burt Reynolds. So I guess that's why she was there.
Well, I'm glad you didn't talk to her.
No, that's why I didn't. I swear to you, because I was like, I'm going to say something really stupid to Lonnie Anderson. I have to stay away. But it was nice to see her, and she really did. She looked so pretty, and I don't know. I wanted to go over and say hello, but I had just gotten there, and there was a bunch of stuff to do. So, all right, here's the reason, though, I brought this up. I had never before experienced virtual reality.
Really?
And I was walking down one of the aisles, and they had this huge display where there were four different scenarios, and you could pick one of them, and you put the headset on, and then you're in the middle of this, you know, fantasy world. So they said, you got to see this. And I go, no, that's all right. I just saw Lonnie Anderson. You're not going to top that. And they go, no.
I get it.
You got to see this. So I go, all right, what do I need to do? So they explain, nothing. You'll sit down and we'll put the headset on you. You've had this done.
Yes.
You've done this, right? So in the one that I was given, like there was one where you could ride a dragon over like a castle or something like that. The one they gave me was a city, much like our city. And in this scenario, they have built a roller coaster that goes from the top of one building to another, to another, to another, to another. So I love roller coasters. So I go, oh, this is perfect. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. All right, I'm in. So headsets on. They start it up. I'm not kidding. I held on to the chair the entire thing, even though I know I'm just seeing a digital move. It's not real. I'm not going to fall off of a building.
It's virtually real.
I couldn't. And the guy was laughing at me because you don't have to hold the chair. And I go, no, I do. But how ridiculous. I knew it was fake.
But it's just the art of it now is Dylan bought like a cheap one on Amazon that you could look at home. And it was a Stranger Things virtual reality. So you'd look around and you'd see lights come on.
Yeah.
And honest to God, you'd reach for things to touch. It's
I know.
Like a 3D movie done well 100 times better.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Oh, you're so cute.
I enjoyed every minute of it, but I kept thinking, like in my head, it's like, I know if I'm on a roller coaster, it probably won't go off the track. But for this, maybe they'll juice it up a little and go, you think this is cool? Watch what happens when your roller coaster goes off the track. So I'm holding onto the chair and the guy's laughing and I go, I know, it's ridiculous. But I really enjoyed it.
Did it go off the track?
No.
Because that's
it stayed on the track.
You have a great idea there. Because obviously in real life, you don't want that to happen. But in virtual life, you'd like to know what it felt like.
You know what? A year and a half ago, I went to Universal Studios in Orlando, and they've got part of their theme park is like a, they call it like Simpsons World or Simpsons Land or something. So one of the attractions there is a virtual reality roller coaster that goes through Springfield, and that one does go off the track. So I thought, oh, maybe that's the thing. Whenever you build these, you make it so it goes off the track. It's even scarier. But I'm holding the chair, even though I know. And then, like, a girl next to me, like two seats down, she wanted to stand up during hers, and they wouldn't let her stand up. They go, no, you have to remain seated.
Because you can fall.
Yeah.
And then they're responsible if you hit your head.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did it. I want one now.
I don't know how expensive they are. They're not that expensive, right?
They're pretty expensive. They're coming down in price.
Some of them just dropped a couple hundred bucks last week.
Did they really? Yeah.
But Steve, I don't know why you don't understand going to these things, because it's just people like Lonnie obviously was there from WKRP in Cincinnati.
But how does that fit Comic-Con?
Yeah, that doesn't fit.
I'm not saying she shouldn't.
Aren't there action figures of WKRP? Are you sure?
I would have them. You would know.
I would definitely have them
if there were.
Lonnie Nessman, I would have that.
I would have a Les Nessman.
Lonnie's would keep falling over.
You're the only one making Lonnie jokes, just for the record.
Because everybody's thinking it and no one's brave enough to say anything. Come on. She's busty.
I'm nodding approval, but I'm not adding
I know.
It.
You're,
I'm
just,
here
I'm,
it is Monday and you've already shown your courage.
Courage. But I thought it's things that people become obsessed with, basically.
Well,
that's what Comic-Con Wizard World.
In the early days of it, it was stuff
sci-fi.
Having to do with sci-fi or horror movies, but mostly, you know, comic book stuff. It's like, oh, that's the guy that used to play Shazam. How are you, guy who used to play Shazam? It's like that kind of thing. But now, you know, I'm trying to think. Well, Cato Kaelin is a good example. He was there.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure
why. Okay.
Also, our
horror story, our guest
from Rookie of the Year.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Ian Nicholas. He was there.
In a way, why? See what I mean?
So it's just become fans, just a celebrity hodgepodge.
It's a fan fest.
Yeah, there's a lot of people there.
A lot of fans of Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah.
Three, two.
Well, I think a lot.
No, I was waiting, counting down for one of your jokes.
They weren't jokes. They're reality. This is not virtual reality. This is reality
for me.
This is
reality, reality.
But I think it's just turned into a fan fest now for anything like that. So it doesn't have to be supernatural or zombie inspired.
So I wonder what their bar is. Like, who would they say? Like, who would have to say?
They
you
let
know,
Cato Kaelin in.
Yeah.
They have no bar.
Yeah.
Really?
So
what does Cato Kaelin do there? Is he at an autograph booth?
He emceed like a talent show.
Okay.
Because when you say to yourself, who would be the perfect guy to MC a talent show? You think, well, Cato Kaelin, but he's
Clark,
not going to do
Ryan
it.
Ryan Seacrest.
Right.
Cato Kaelin.
It was celebrity roommates.
Really?
I don't know what it was. They were explaining it to me, and I didn't understand it. I kept not, because I said to them, what's going on today? And they go, and we've got Cato Kaelin, and I go, well, what's he doing? And they were explaining to me, but I didn't understand it at all. I just kept nodding. Oh, that's a great idea.
I know that the last few times we've gone, we've purchased so much memorabilia because between Jim's Star Wars obsession and Dylan loves Ghostbusters and anything Stan Lee, it got to be very expensive.
There was a guy there. Now, keep in mind, there's a percentage of people who just go to dress up like various characters.
Our own Stephanie Menendez.
Stephanie, she did?
Oh, she totally. Her kids dress up.
So there was a guy there who, he weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of 350 pounds. If I'm off, I'm not off by much. He was right around 350. And he was only wearing a diaper. And then he had something written on his stomach, but I couldn't look long enough because my eyes started to bleed every time I started to look over. And the best part was the diaper was pulled down in the back, so you got to see way more than you needed or wanted to see.
I bet he was Captain Underpants.
I bet he was Captain
Underpants.
But
he needed a cape. Did he have a cape?
He did not have a cape, but you couldn't get near this guy because everybody wanted their picture taken with him. He was like Lonnie Anderson's looking over at this guy going, who's that guy? Why does he have a line of people? And I'm Lonnie Anderson, and there's not as many people to see me. But like I wanted to go, I just wanted to see who he was supposed to be, but I couldn't. You couldn't get near the guy.
I bet he was Captain Underpants.
That would make sense. It wasn't the prettiest picture.
Yeah. Everybody gets into dressing up.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, they really do. And I was listening to Dane Neal's interview with Michael Rooker, mm-hmm. and he said how much he adores the fans that do the cosplay because you think about it, all the money that goes into coming up with these outfits, either they buy them or make them, but they're still...
Right.
Somebody went as Yondu once and made a leather duster that he wore in it, and it was real leather, and that's really expensive.
The attention to detail is overwhelming. There's no doubt about that. I'm amazed at that end of it. But then I'm also amazed at how many people want to have their picture taken, because I just want to go, you know, that's just a guy from Downers Grove dressed up like one of the Ghostbusters. It's not really one of the Ghostbusters. You know that, right?
You need to let go and have fun.
I do have fun.
With a guy with 350-pound diapers.
No, I took a picture with a fake Wolverine last year, and I loved it.
But then what do you do with that?
I put it on Facebook, and it came up as a reminder this year, remember this? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he was buff. Okay, move along.
Yeah.
It was fun at the moment.
I know.
You know, you got to kind of just suspend belief and go, all right, here, let's pretend it's Wolverine.
Yeah.
You look just like him, too.
Okay, but so you see a guy who's 350 pounds wearing a diaper.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd take a picture with him.
See, yeah, and that scares me a little bit. I want to be away from those people.
All during this, now, my encounter with him was less than a minute. I'm walking one way, he's coming the other way. And I see this.
That was a long eye roll. A minute.
It took a minute to take all of him in and then roll my eyes. Took about a minute.
Did the room go dark and drop 10 degrees?
At least 10. But I kept thinking, if we were anywhere else other than Comic-Con, people would be calling security, Homeland Security. They'd go, there's somebody very dangerous in my area. Please come and remove him. But over there, he was embraced. People loved him. They wanted their picture taken with him.
Because everybody gets to let their inner freak flag fly.
Yeah.
Except you.
Except for me and Lonnie Anderson.
You're going to go next year as virtual reality boy, I have a feeling.
It's possible. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I had a strange experience happen to me over the weekend.
What happened?
We had a family picnic that went wonderful, a chicken party, if you will. But on Saturday, I decided this was my day to go shopping, and so I went shopping, and I was at Nordstrom Rack in Oak Brook.
Yeah.
And I was trying on some shoes, and the shoe aisles are super duper narrow.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little cart there.
Much like your shoes.
No, I have wide feet.
Oh.
But thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
It's the ultimate compliment.
So I am trying on a pair of shoes, and they lace up, and so I was kind of tying them, and I went and I whipped my head up to stand up,
yeah,
and I hit the handle of the cart so hard that I saw stars, I saw black for a minute, and I know this is ridiculous because, again, I'm at Nordstrom Rack in Oak Brook.
Yeah.
I thought I got shot.
It was that painful.
I didn't know what happened. I couldn't figure it out.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yeah.
Why the need to whip your head up before standing up?
Well,
there's a lot of people when they stand up.
The blue light go off?
I don't really know why, and it's not their fault, but the handle of the cart sticks out a little bit over the wheel.
Yeah.
So I there was a lady coming, and I was trying to keep myself kind of contained to a small area, so I tied my shoes. And I came up just, I guess I didn't whip it up like I'm flicking my hair back, but I came up kind of quickly because I was
too
anxious
fast.
To see my shoes.
So it sounds like you were concussed.
Yeah.
Well, it was really weird because I didn't know what happened. It took me a minute to figure out what had happened, and I thought, I've just been shot. And then I'm thinking, I'm probably not going to get shot in Oak Brook at Nordstrom
not
Rack.
Nordstrom Rack. No.
Although people who can't afford Nordstrom might be disgruntled that they have to go to the rack.
Maybe.
I don't know. So then I was supposed to be shopping all day, and I thought, I'm going to text Jimmy Mack and say that, you know, I'm coming home because I hit my head. And I accidentally texted my neighbor. I thought I was texting Jim.
No.
And I basically just texted, and this is just out of the blue. She gets a text from me that says, I'm going to be coming home. I bent down to try some shoes on, and I came up and hit my head on the shopping cart, and I saw stars, and I'm feeling really weird. And so my neighbor responds, you need help?
Oh, yeah, that's a true friend. They would have driven out to get you.
So unbelievably stupid, because then I'm like, do I need help? And then I put, whoops, meant to send this to Jim. Just so you know, Rose, I did keep shopping and I did buy the shoes.
Oh.
But I felt so stupid. And a lot of times if you have a text coming with somebody, another text will come in, so that's like first on your phone.
Yeah.
So just please pay attention to the texts you send to people.
Sure.
Because could you imagine, I don't really talk to you too much on the weekend, if all of a sudden you got this text that I've hit my head, I'm seeing stars, and I feel really weird. I mean,
I wouldn't know what to do with that information. But you know, you about once every other week, I do get a call from you that you don't know you've
still?
Made. Yeah. I get them all the time from you.
God. Really?
About one or two a month. So every other week.
Is there anything good on it?
No. I always listen in for a while, and then I start to feel guilty, so I stop listening.
Come on, Bill. Guilty or bored?
I can't.
A little bit of both.
Listen, I complained to you about not being able to use your phone.
Right.
I use it too much.
Right.
Do you ever look, Wendy, at calls, frequent calls on your phone? Like, do you see a lot more numbers there than you remember dialing?
I don't know. I'm concussed.
See, now you can use that as a reason. You could say to your neighbor, I was in a very stressful situation, banged my head. You read my text. You know what I was going through.
Have you gone through the concussion protocol? Maybe you shouldn't be back at work yet.
Right.
No, but I felt like I was slurring my words a little bit.
If the NFL, you'd have to sit out till Wednesday or right. Thursday.
I don't think I ever hit my head this hard in my life.
It's all, isn't it painful?
Yeah, I got a big lump on my noggin now.
Oh, no.
I couldn't blow dry my hair because it hurt to pull the brush.
To that. That's pain and suffering right there.
I know.
You should sue somebody.
But then later in the afternoon, I texted Rose and said, I've fallen and I can't get up. Can you help me? And she didn't answer me.
No, she's done with you.
Just be careful whom you text.
That's true. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news next and then a lot coming up, including, I think we're talking to Ryan Burrow after that, or we don't know yet. We're going to try to talk
to
Ryan.
We're trying to get a hold of him. He's in Houston.
He's in Texas. What a mess over there, boy. Just such an awful story. So we've got that and then other things coming up. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
What if you were in a clown virtual reality?
My brain would not accept that. I could not. There's no way I could accept that at all. You know, in the past, we've talked a little bit about clowns. There was There was a while that both in the United States and England, people thought it'd be funny to dress up like clowns and just walk around places. Sometimes
that's not
at
funny.
Night. It's not funny. That's not funny at all. For some reason, many of us, I'm not going to say all of us, but many of us have some sort of an aversion to clowns. There's something about clowns that scares us. Now, I take out of the equation Bozo the Clown. He is beloved, Bozo.
Ronald McDonald.
Ronald McDonald is certainly beloved. And several governors and senators. But for most of us...
Only after they're released.
Right. After they've served their time, they are beloved. But for many of us, the idea of a clown, and we've tried to analyze this, and we never have a clear-cut answer, is petrifying. I don't know why, but it is.
I know. And remember we had that adorable couple in that were from the clown college or whatever, and we saw them pre-makeup, and we were fine talking to them.
Right.
But then even knowing them after the makeup was on, there was a little bit of a different reaction.
Right. Now, I think last time we talked about this, we agreed that it was something about having a painted smile. Do you remember that? Either you brought it up or a listener brought it up.
Yeah, you can't really judge a person by their makeup, thank God.
Right. Tammy Faye Baker said that years ago.
While crying.
Right.
It's not their true identity.
Right.
So that's what creeps me out is like, I see you, I see your facial expressions.
Yeah.
If you have a fakely painted expression, I'm not seeing the real you and it frightens me.
Okay, can I just say that for me is the same as the cosplay thing?
Well, yes.
I get that.
Me too.
That makes sense.
Mascots, because I can't see their face, and I don't know if there's a man
right.
or a woman in there,
right.
and I just...
makes it more palatable somehow.
I like to talk to people who are genuine people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I will also throw this on there, and again, I will say this isn't always the case, but I have known some people in my life who have been clowns, and they almost always have some horrific backstory. Like, the reason they do it... is because something tragic happened and they needed to be a clown to make things right.
I bet if you did a study, comedians are
Doubt.
There's a similarity.
It's a higher number of comedians than it is clowns.
What's Carrot Top's deal?
I don't want to know.
Because he's a clowny comic.
I don't want to know what his deal is. All right, so I bring this up because they're bringing back this story, It, that Stephen King wrote years and years ago. Now, they did it once before with Tim Curry playing the clown. Pennywise is his name in the story. But they've got a new version that's coming out in about a week and a half.
Wasn't Tim Curry the first version?
Yeah, he was
okay,
the first
Okay, that was
version.
The television
yeah,
movie.
Right.
He was great. The whole thing was
very
great.
Scary.
This looks way scarier.
Oh, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. It looks so scary. Well, now there's a theater in Austin, Texas that is going to have a screening of this movie. It opens up on September 9th, but they're having a screening of it. Only for clowns.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes. You must come dressed as a clown. You must be a clown, and then you get into the screening. Can you imagine what those 2 hours would be like, sitting in a theater filled with clowns watching the movie It?
Although if you're a clown, it's not going to bother you. You're just right. going to be sitting there with your peers.
Right.
It's not even going to look weird to you.
Right.
Oh, there's Frankie Bell. Oh.
So for $10, I'm guessing you get a ticket to see the movie and an unlimited supply of seltzer water, and you can enjoy the film. It says here, it's a perfect... Now, this is a word that I had heard before. I never remember this word. It's a perfect coulrophobia storm of epic proportions. Coulrophobia, I don't know if we talked about it on the show or if I just heard this somewhere, has to do with people's fear of all things clowning. It's C-O-U-L-R-O-phobia, coulrophobia. The Alamo Draft House, that's the place showing the movie, in Austin, Texas, is actually committing itself to an entire screening of It populated exclusively by clowns. There's a lot of film fans out there who you couldn't pay to sit in and watch such a thing. Saturday, September 9th screening is something of a clever joke, referencing the time last spring when the Draft House announced a woman's only screening of Wonder Woman. Do you remember this? This was a national.
Yes.
This was a huge story because they said we were showing Wonder Woman and only women are involved, and people were like, "Well, you can't just do that. Why is that fair?"
Men felt left out.
But no one is objecting to this clowns only screening. People are going, "Just don't. I don't want to be there. Have all the clowns you want. I'm not attending." At the time, one Facebook commenter asked if there would be an It screening specifically for those who identify as clowns, which was presumably thought hilarious and horrifying at the same time.
It's not hilarious at all.
It's not hilarious. It's horrifying. Presumably, they will now have people yelling at them that this is discriminatory against non-clowns.
No, because you just dress up as a clown and you can go and have fun.
Yeah, right. Try to have fun. It, if you don't know, is an adaptation of one of Stephen King's most popular and heralded novels concerning the battle between a group of young children and the demonic extra-dimensional presence known simply as It, which manifests itself in the shape of a killer clown known as Pennywise. The film is directed by Andy Muschietti and stars Bill Skarsgård as the new version of Pennywise, reprising the role made famous, as we had mentioned, by Tim Curry in the classic performance in the four-hour 1990 TV miniseries. Did you watch it when it was first on?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you say, like, if I had to go through the scariest things I ever saw on TV, there were elements of that that kept just, it was so creepy. There's another Stephen King one, Salem's Lot, that had this kid, Danny Glick, who had died. He had died in the show, and then he showed up at his friend's window, and he was just floating on the window and knocking on the window,
and
he wanted to be let in.
Would you let your friend in?
Not after they died and floated outside my window.
He's your friend. He's not going to hurt you.
Well, and, you know, I have standards. I can't, like, if he was alive and he came up the stairs, I'm fine with it, but once you start floating
no
outside
floating?
My window, no.
No floaters.
No. No floaters.
All right.
But those were...
That was creepy.
And Trilogy of Terror, that little nyang, 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 that guy, very scary.
That was a made-for-TV?
Yeah.
Karen Black?
Karen Black was in that.
That was really scary.
Dan Curtis, who did Kolchak the Night Stalker and Dark Shadows, was responsible for that. That was his production.
Those were really creepy, scary.
Those were very scary. But the clown scenes in It, where he would just stare at these group of boys.
He would just appear and stare.
Very
creep-a-zoid. There's some psychologists that put things together. The main reason we're creeped out by clowns, this totally makes sense. We feel we can't trust them.
Because of the
makeup? They have large, artificial, painted-on expressions, which you know don't actually represent how the clown is feeling, because nobody can be happy all the time, and yet this clown has this big, happy, smiling face. So in essence, you sort of know that it's lying to you in terms of the presentation. That makes total sense.
That makes total sense. Now, let me bring this into it also. When I was a kid, my favorite show when I was really little was Batman, the TV version of Batman. And for me, the Joker was by far the worst of the criminals, because even as a kid, I said to myself, because he's a clown and you want to trust a clown, like the other guy's a penguin and, you know, the Riddler and Egghead and stuff. Those guys,
what
I get
a clown.
That. A clown shouldn't be a bad guy. But to me, that's what made him the worst of the bad guys, because he fooled us.
He's he like, did. That's what it
friend.
Is. Another psychologist says many people are also afraid of clown mannerisms. People are afraid of clowns because they're so mischievous and unpredictable, and unlike vampires and ghosts, they really exist and could possibly cause trouble for you.
That makes sense. That does make sense.
Typical clown behavior, throwing pies.
Yeah.
Squirting people with water.
Yeah.
Cracking crude jokes makes us all uncomfortable and distrustful.
So why have they existed for so long and continue to exist? Like, you can't have a circus without clowns. They're just always there.
And why are they always centered around kids' birthday parties? That's the last place you'd want a clown.
I know.
Have a creepy adult party and have a clown instead of a DJ.
That's where you get a clown. All right. We're at
so many questions,
Phil. So many questions. We're at 312-981-7200. Do you have the answers to any of these questions or questions of your own? We're trying to figure out why clowns continue to frighten us. 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you're just joining us, I want to make you aware of the fact that on Saturday, September the 9th, the Alamo Draft House in Austin, Texas, is having a special screening of the new movie It. That's the one with the clown that is very, very scary. Very, very scary. You get to go see the movie with other people dressed as clowns. Everybody in attendance gets in, provided they are... a clown.
This is more like Phantom of the Opera clown.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's a weak calliope. That's all I got to
say. It says, for the special screening of It, all attendees should arrive dressed as a clown in order to attend. This according to a statement from the theater. They'll be putting on a barrel of fun. Barrel O' Fun. I want to make sure I pronounce that correctly. Barrel O' Fun. It's more fun if it's just O and apostrophe than of. This will include a pre-party with face paint stations, although if you're a clown, that's already done.
Yeah.
Right? There will also be photo booths and raffles.
God, this sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Yep.
But the good news, Ted has some good news about this little screening of It. Your thoughts, Ted?
Yeah, there'd be all kinds of economic benefit, you know, like for makeup, wild clothes, big shoes, that whole deal. Plus, parking should be a cinch because they're all going to show up in like 4 cars.
Here comes the limo. That way there's one clown, there's another clown, there's a third clown, 4 clowns, 5 clowns.
Yep. Looks like the audience is here.
Yep, everybody arrives together.
Thank you, Ted.
Beautiful.
Do you have an aversion to clowns yourself, Ted?
Not really. It entertains the other people that do, but it is kind of a wild dynamic there. And I've always been wondering, like, people are scared of clowns. Why do we keep bringing them to the birthday parties? That doesn't make any sense.
It really doesn't. And when was the last time you actually belly laughed at something a clown did?
Probably when they were all getting out of the 4 cars.
Yep. That's the one.
Thank you, Ted. Have a good one. Clowns aren't funny to me.
The one that made me laugh was the guy we had on, Bello Knock from Brothers. He truly was astounding.
But no makeup, see? I'm telling you, the
limited,
makeup.
Limited, real limited amount of makeup.
I don't remember any makeup, just the crazy hair.
He did have a lot of hair. And I think I've told you, when I grew up in Oak Forest and we got a McDonald's finally, it was a big, big deal. And Ronald McDonald, or possibly a guy just dressed up to look like Ronald McDonald, was there at the opening. And we all stood in a long line to have our pictures taken with Ronald McDonald. And he kept doing this weird thing with his thumbs. Like, he wouldn't stop making his thumbs go in it. Even our pictures, like the pictures my brother and my friend and I had with him, like one thumb is pointed up and the other. And he kept doing that. And it was really, it was creeping everybody out.
Like, is that where Elaine Bennis got her dance from Seinfeld?
The thumb dance. I think she learned it from Ronald McDonald. To this day, I can't figure, like, let's say you got hired to be Ronald McDonald at that thing. Would somebody have to say to you, make sure you keep making your thumbs move in all different directions all through the day? Kids love that.
I don't think he was an experienced clown.
I don't think he
was. If you want to know the truth.
I don't think he was.
All right, Julie wants to talk to us. Hey, Clowny, how are you, Julie?
Well, my clown name was Inky.
What was it?
What was it?
Inky.
Inky the clown. Because why? Did you have a fountain pen explode on you or something?
No, I had to make my shoes, and I made, like, big ink spots on my shoes. And so, anyway, I used to be a Christian clown.
What is a Christian clown?
Well, the group we were associated with out of Yorkville called Merry Hearts, and we were a smaller group out of another church in my hometown, and we would actually act out in clown version Bible stories.
Clowning for Christ.
Yes, do you think God would approve of this? Because it seems silly.
I have to think God has a good sense of humor.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I hope so. Wow.
But I'll tell you why I gave it up. I always had a migraine. Most of our events were in the summertime. I usually had a migraine from wearing the wigs. And that makeup is not comfortable at all. It, like, closes up all your pores. And so you don't sweat. You just kind of saturate from the inside out.
Oh no. It's awful.
Pretty uncomfortable. But the group in Yorkville is still going. They go to Russia every year, and they raise enough money to go and help children in Russia.
Oh, that's nice. That part's good. But sorry about the headaches. You should have been Advil the Clown. That would have been a better name for you.
As soon as I could, the wig went out in the trash because it wasn't for me.
Ugh.
It's kind of a good idea because, you know, you're teaching Bible stories and you're teaching kids to learn about the Bible, and they had no aversion to clowns. They thought it was really nice, right?
Well, but, you know, we were also instructed to look at the children very closely, and if parents were pushing them forward and the children didn't want any part of it, we'd say to the parents, it's not the right time.
Yeah.
You know, just let your children go on and do what they want to do.
Because that, we talked about that too. My mom used to take me to the Shriners Circus when I was little, and my grandma mainly would be the one, there's a clown, go stand by it, and she would push you off to it. So that's probably why we're afraid.
That is what really scares the kids, and we would always look at the body language first and foremost.
You were a good clown,
yeah.
Inky.
Thank you for letting me share my story.
Of course.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Julie. Bye.
Inky the clown.
I understand the migraines. I get the migraines part.
The wigs do get tight.
Sure. All right. We'll take a quick break, some news, and then more show. Eric Zorn joins us at 11:35. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Rich Lenkov is a partner with Bryce Downey and Lenkov. He's also co-host of an awesome podcast called Legal Face-Off that you can find wherever your favorite podcasts are found and, of course, on WGNplus.com. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Good morning.
Rich, let's talk about this sheriff, Joe Arpaio, who was pardoned. They're calling it a dump-off. A lot of times with the news cycle on a late Friday afternoon into early Friday evening, sometimes something will happen on purpose so that it doesn't get much attention. But this is getting tons of attention, even though it happened on a late Friday. The pardoning of Joe Arpaio, Donald Trump's first pardoning.
Yes. 216 days or so into his presidency, which is early, but not the earliest. Of course, you know, Ford pardoned Nixon, I think, 4 weeks into his presidency. Clinton and Bush the second also pardoned people earlier. So it's not so much the timing as much as the substance of the pardon. Number one, he did not go through the formal vetting process that most pardons go through dealing with Congress. There's also an official White House office counsel for pardons. Apparently, the president circumvented both of those processes, which is not surprising.
Within his
absolutely
within his rights, he as the president can do that. But normally, as you pointed out, you go through Congress first. But then there would normally be the fear that they would say to him, "No, we advise against this." He didn't want to deal with that.
Yeah, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, as you mentioned, grants the president pretty wide-ranging pardon power. So he certainly did so in a legal fashion. Politically, you know, of course, there's people questioning the timing, as you mentioned, on a Friday night, also in the midst of the hurricane in Houston. But as you mentioned, you know, there's really nothing that Trump does that's conventional. And of course, he tweeted about it. So, you know, that circumvents all the news cycles. But yeah, it was certainly legal. You know, the pardon was based on the criminal contempt conviction that a federal court judge found. The sheriff was ordered to stop racial profiling. And he refused to do so over the course of 18 months. And a second federal judge found him in contempt of court, criminal contempt of court, which is punishable by about 6 months in jail. He was awaiting sentencing, and in stepped Trump to pardon him. So now he's got a fresh slate.
Why does he do this? Why does Donald Trump do this? Seriously.
It's just playing to his base, right? I mean, I think it's clear that he did this to show that he's in favor of law and order, even though, ironically, by rejecting what a federal court judge said, that's the very opposite of law and order. But it's consistent with Trump mocking the judiciary on several occasions. Remember the judge who presided over the Trump University case?
Yeah.
He called him a so-called judge. He questioned whether he can be fair because he was of Mexican descent.
Yeah.
He ridiculed the Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, Chief Justice. So it's consistent with the way Trump has acted towards the judiciary. And again, I think it's playing to his base. I think, you know, someone who wants to build a wall, it's very consistent with talking about pardoning someone who is racial profiling, especially of Hispanics.
In the past, was there much, if any, relationship between Trump and Arpaio? There was.
Arpaio was one of the first people to publicly endorse Trump. So they've talked about being friends for years. Arpaio was an early questioner of Obama's citizenship. In fact, he sent a deputy sheriff to Hawaii to look for Obama's birth certificate, which, you know, was obviously a political stunt, not inconsistent with what Arpaio has done in the past.
Yeah.
He settled another case where someone, he alleged, planned an assassination attempt in a diner parking lot against the sheriff. Turns out the sheriff made the whole thing up. He staged this whole would-be assassination attempt as a publicity stunt. So sending someone to Hawaii to look up Obama's birth status, setting up your own assassination attempt, these are all stunts that the sheriff has been doing over, you know, six terms as Maricopa County Sheriff.
With Arpaio.
Stunning, right?
It's stunning.
It is stunning.
Yeah, it is amazing. With Arpaio, even though he was told to stop the racial profiling, he not only didn't stop, it seemed to spur him on and want him to do more of it.
He continued to do it. He boasted about it,
yeah.
All of which the judge cited in the contempt order. He flagrantly violated not only a judge, but a federal court judge. You know, federal court judges, pretty important people. They're appointed by the president of the United States, and they don't like it when their orders are not followed.
Yeah.
The sheriff felt that he didn't have to follow what the federal court judge ordered, and it turns out that, you know, that sentiment was, strengthened by what Trump did on Friday.
So normally with the previous presidents, not the current president, but the previous presidents, they have some counsel that they go to and they say, hey, here's what I'm thinking about doing. What are the pros and cons if we pardon this guy? Does Donald Trump just forego that? There's no part of that in his.
So Trump went to Attorney General Sessions earlier and asked him if they can just vacate the criminal conviction. And Sessions, quite appropriately, said what any lawyer would say, let alone the chief lawyer of the United States, or any thinking person would say, which was, Yeah, not such a great idea.
Yeah.
You can't just vacate a criminal conviction of a federal court judge. So he went to Sessions. He did not, apparently, you know, we don't know all the ins and outs of it, but according to all the reports and according to the timing of it, he did not go to the White House counsel for pardons. He also clearly did not go to Congress. When asked about this, Sarah Huckabee last week said, you know, a vague statement about, well, certainly Trump would consult with his legal counsel about all issues. But, you know, to answer your question, clearly he did not go through the established process by which other presidents have used this Article 2, Section 2 power.
Does he have other people that he's considering pardoning that we should be aware of?
He's got about 10,000 applications in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, everything from, you know, people who are in prison for minor offenses to very serious and well-known offenses. Whether he will use more, who knows? He certainly has the ability to do so. You know, like we talked about, usually presidents will wait until the end of their term.
Bill Clinton, is also ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, then you're, you know, totally taking the easy way out by not having any scrutiny. But Clinton very famously pardoned Mark Rich on his way out of office.
A friend of his.
Trump seems like he's not afraid to use the pardon power, and I bet he'll use it again. But I'm not aware of any high-profile cases like Joe Arpaio.
A great text. Maybe Donald Trump wants to pardon him so he can hire him to guard his wall.
You know, that's funny, but he's already come on and said, the sheriff is, and he's 85 years old, I think. He's already come on and said that he'll take any job in the Trump administration. You know, on I think it was Meet the Press yesterday, someone had a really interesting statement getting inside Trump's head on this issue. They said that by pardoning the sheriff, he's really pardoning himself. He's really giving himself license to act the way
he does.
He does. And it's really sort of an interesting look inside Trump's head, but I think there's some validity to that. So,
is it true a couple months ago, and it's still playing through all the way into the weekend, people have said that Donald Trump has asked people if at some point he needs to be pardoned, if he can pardon himself. Is that true or is that just a story going around?
No, absolutely. That's a question that's been raised in the wake of the Russian probe, whether if convicted in the Russian probe, whether he can turn around and pardon himself. The answer is who knows, right? There's no precedent to that for good reason. Lots of constitutional scholars differ on whether that's the case. But again, Article 2, Section 2 is really widely written, and it's been used for a wide variety of crimes. Whether it could be used to pardon himself, I would say probably, but whether that would hold up in court is a different question. I think ultimately the Supreme Court would probably overturn that.
This isn't real life, right?
Is
this virtual reality like you were talking about earlier,
Bill?
Yeah,
it is. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more with Rich Lenkoff. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach us easily at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with attorney Rich Lenkoff. Saw this in the news. A 26-year-old woman was paralyzed when a bus shelter collapsed during a storm. And she was awarded what, the most that has ever been awarded here in Illinois or in Chicago?
Yeah, in Chicago, the largest personal injury award by a Cook County jury. Cook County, of course, encompasses Chicago. Last Wednesday here at the Daly Center, a jury of 12 people awarded this young lady $148 million to compensate her for the injury she suffered in, as you mentioned, the accident at O'Hare in 2015.
It was a bad storm. I know things happen. Tierney Darden, a dancer and student at Truman College at the time, sued the city of Chicago after the incident at O'Hare. The city had offered to settle the case for $22 million, but Darden's attorney refused. And how does it go from $22 to $148?
Well, the attorney in closing arguments, Pat Salvi, who's a plaintiff's lawyer, asked the jury for $175 million. As you mentioned, the city offered $22 million, and they asked the jury for $175, and the jury came back not quite with what they asked for, but pretty close.
Yeah.
Fairly shocking verdict, not because of the fact that they found for the plaintiff, because liability was actually not in dispute. The city admitted that they were liable. This shelter had been very damaged, had not been maintained. So liability was not an issue. The issue was damages. The issue was how much this woman would get. And it was shocking because, as you mentioned, it was a record. But, you know, you see cases all the time with people dying, with babies having, you know, life threatening injuries, who get, you know, money, but not close to $147 million. I was just reading yesterday a verdict of someone who was 31 years old who died as a result of a surgery, and his estate got something like $12 million.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they hit big with this lawsuit. There's no question that this woman, who's paralyzed now, who's confined to a wheelchair.
And she was a dancer.
Of course.
Seriously, she'll never dance again.
Yeah, so no question, a life altering injury, but the jury really sided with her in this case, no question.
So does the lawyer, I know this will sound crude, but does the lawyer play that up? Does the lawyer say, this is a very active young woman who was a dancer and will never have that dream realized again? You play that up to some extent, don't you?
Oh, no question. And not only through the testimony of the plaintiff, which in this case was very compelling because, as you might have seen in her press conference, she said, you know, they took away the two things that were most important to me, my legs.
Yeah.
But also through expert testimony, through doctors, through day-in-the-life videos showing what her days are like today. Because, you know, you can explain to a jury all you want how impactful these injuries are, but obviously, if you show a video, that's you know, very strong. So through a variety of different pieces of evidence, they showed the impact that this injury had on her life.
Let's talk about the liability angle on this for just a second. The city admitted that they were liable. They didn't upkeep this shelter. You see this every winter. You'll see signs on the buildings in downtown Chicago saying, you know, beware of falling ice and stuff like that. How liable is the building should something like a block of ice fall from your building and hurt or kill somebody? Is that up to you?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So there's a theory called natural accumulation that plays into it. You know, we're dealing with basically premises liability kind of situations that you mentioned, or in this case with O'Hare. There's a theory that if the danger is caused by something that's natural, like the weather. So if you walk out of the studio and you slip and fall on ice, that's a natural accumulation. That's an act of God.
Yeah.
Now, if you can prove that the ice was caused because the slope of the sidewalk is different, or in your case, because the building had something to do with the fall,
yeah,
then there's some liability for the building or for the city or whoever. The fact that you have a sign up doesn't necessarily mean that you're not liable. It could, you know, mitigate the damages or mitigate liability, but the fact that you put a sign up doesn't mean that you're not responsible.
This is an interesting question, and maybe I stressed it in a bad way. Scott, your question?
Yes, I just want to say I feel much sympathy for this woman. She got what she deserves. So not to be rude, but how does it play into that she's a dancer, she can't dance again, as opposed to I'm a garbage man, I can't drive my truck again? How do those things relate to each other? She was hurt, her lifestyle has changed, just the same as if a truck driver's lifestyle has changed. How does that specifically play into this case?
Yeah, good question.
That
so
is.
You would, in this case, they're arguing for a variety of damages, including economic damages, right? So they'd be arguing that, or they did argue that this woman experienced loss of wages and loss of wages in the future. So you would bring in, as they did in this case, an economist to show how much she could have earned in the future as a dancer. But I think to your point, it's a lot more speculative when you're, you know, a potential dancer than someone who's actually employed earning money. And that just depends on how strong your evidence is and how credible the testimony is. But to answer your question, in these cases, the way you prove those economic damages are through your own testimony, saying, I was earning this amount of money before and I can't earn it now. And in addition, you would bring in an economist to project in the future what you could earn in the life in your lifetime based on working as a dancer or a driver or anything else.
Great question,
okay,
Scott.
How about in the case of, you said a gentleman guy got $12 million, does that come into play of what they were going to earn as well?
Yes.
I mean, that gentleman is dead. He can't do anything. And again, I don't mean to be disrespectful to this woman. She is alive. She can enjoy her life. But if you pass away, do those things play in a court case as well?
Well, and usually if you're, you know, if you're dealing with someone who passed away, you're not dealing with loss of future income, right, for obvious reasons, because you're not working. Your estate can't claim that. And in certain circumstances, they can claim, if they're minors, that they would have benefited from your earnings. But generally, those future lost earnings don't play into a case involving someone who passed away.
Yeah, I think that's a little askew, because if you do pass away from, let's say this woman had passed away, aren't her earnings still cut short due to the negligence of the city? So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. That's the way it is. I just think that's askew. Her earnings are cut short, and the gentleman who passed away's earnings are cut short. I think lawsuits like this, we're going to see start seeing bigger lawsuits, you know, as a result of this case specifically.
It's possible. It's very possible. Scott, thanks for the call.
Appreciate it.
Rich, similarly, there's been a debate for years of exactly how much is a human life worth, and I've heard lawyers make the argument. My client was a doctor, an attorney, who was making X amount of money a year, so you sue for the amount that they would be losing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that plays into it. And to the caller's point, there's definitely a disparity between a lot of the cases that we've seen involving people who have passed away and someone who, in this case, is, you know, living. Certainly she's living with a lifetime of pain and agony and suffering. Yeah. But when comparing, as I mentioned at the top of the issue, when comparing this case, $148 million, to cases involving people who die, I think there's certainly disparity there. And why that is, who knows? That's the jury system. You know, you could have another 12 people look at the exact same case and find a lot less, and sometimes find no liability at all.
Thank you very much. I wish we had more time because there are other stories in the news we would like to talk about with you. You will be covering them on Legal Faceoff, perhaps?
Absolutely. Legal Faceoff on WGN.
Really appreciate it. That's Rich Lankoff. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next, and then Eric Zorn joins us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
You were conducting.
Yeah, that
you
music
were air
moved
conducting.
Me. Yeah. I was Arthur Fiedlering. Eric Zorn
Isn't that
is here,
a great
everybody.
Song? It's just a great
it's
song.
A beautiful song.
I love that song. I sing it to myself all week.
Had that song been a song when you got married, wouldn't you think that'd be the appropriate walk down the aisle music?
I think Johanna would have gone for that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Absolutely.
I
no?
Don't really
no, you don't
think so.
So.
I
That's
don't.
Strange. Every once in a while, Eric, you compile a bunch of tweets, funny tweets, and you read them out loud, and we all have a chuckle.
Well, I do it once a month.
Yeah.
For the Bill and Wendy, and I do it for the Bill and Wendy show. I want to say this, and I usually do it like the first Monday of the month, but since we're not going to be together next week, because I understand that you guys are taking a day off.
Yeah.
On
That's
Labor
next
day.
Week already.
Yeah.
A week from today.
Yeah.
Holy guacamole.
I guess there are no plans around the McInerney Snyder house
not.
For Labor Day. So that's where we're not going to be. Is
All
their
right.
house.
I guess not.
They think, so anyway,
do
I got
them
the,
today.
I got the test. So I'm going to do them today because I thought, well, we can't wait till the middle of September. That would be absurd.
And again, People just to reiterate, even though you will not credit who said these originally, you usually have a way that people can
No, I'll
out.
Give a link to Kevin.
All right.
And you can go online and see who did it. Because you know, it's you know, crediting them would ruin the flow
sure.
That I planned
I understand.
Very carefully for this.
All right.
In rehearsal. You remember how it went in rehearsal.
It killed
it's
in rehearsal.
Gonna, it's going right. to go, go really well
All
now.
Right, good.
So anyway, and you know, this is every week I have a poll, online poll, and this is these are my favorites, not necessarily reader favorites. These are my favorites. Let's see if you like them. Anyway. Open mic night sounded like a lot of fun until I realized I'd been invited to an autopsy. There you go, huh? This is a little dialogue here. Me, I can't wait for the Game of Thrones series finale. Friend, oh, I didn't know you watched Game of Thrones. Me, I don't.
That's a conversation that's been had in every office around town the last couple of weeks.
Oh, I don't watch it. I'm just hoping it's going to be glad it's over. Anyway,
yeah.
Everyone who thought having a CEO president would be a good idea, raise your hand. Okay, now use that hand to punch yourself in the face. This is an observation.
That seems
here.
Violent.
How about
but
this?
Okay.
How about this one? This one I thought would appeal to Bill. I think Curious George has trouble with so many everyday tasks because he's a monkey and people have unrealistic expectations of him.
I love that.
Like, yeah, of course.
You're like Curious George, you know.
Yeah, I'm similar to Curious George.
Here's a timely one from last week. I took off my shirt when I got home, and my wife put her eclipse glasses back on.
Jeez.
I don't go swimming because it's never been 30 minutes after the last time I ate.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay. All along the watchtower, people squinted and said, I told you we should have built a clock tower. Anyway, I'm sorry I lied, but in my defense, telling the truth would have had consequences, and I hate those.
Very funny.
I like that. Check out this one. I grew up just a stone's throw away from where that whole family died of mysterious head injuries.
Some of these have an almost Charles Adams-y flavor
to
them, don't they?
My tastes run toward those.
Yeah.
Who's Charles Adams? Sorry.
The Adams family?
He's the originator of the Adams family. Or do you remember, was his name Gayon Wilson?
The very,
very,
very
dark cartoonist. Yeah.
Well, Charles Adams was the cartoonist who did the Adams family for years, and then they picked up on it to do the TV show and then the movie. So it's this very dark stuff.
And Gayon Wilson is the other guy who always wrote like the darkest of dark cartoons, very morbid.
Yes, well, that runs to my taste.
Yes, it certainly does.
Number 10 is, I thought my upstairs neighbors were playing a really loud trombone duet, but it turns out it was just two of Charlie Brown's teachers having sex.
That one's awesome.
So that's the top 10 from August.
Very funny. Like very, so very funny.
And those will be, I'll give a link to Kevin, and you can put it on your Facebook page, and people can find out who wrote those and credit them.
Love it.
Fan letters.
Very good. Anyway. Eric, if you wouldn't mind, let's discuss this Voucher Light program. First, explain for people who are not aware of what the Voucher Light program is. Tell them what it is.
Well, what's happened in Springfield right now is to get the compromise on education funding between Democrats and Republicans, the Democrats have apparently thrown in this idea of a tax credit program where in which you give money to a private school scholarship foundation and you get 75 cents on the dollar tax credit, which means that's money that comes right off your tax bill. In some states, it's a dollar for dollar credit. But what this is, it's sort of a backdoor way around the general prohibition that we have about just using public money to fund private schools. They're using this, and so what happens is, like, if you owe $1,000 to the state and you've given $750 to the scholarship fund for private schools, I'm sorry, if you've given $1,000 to the state, you can write $750 off your tax bill. So it's not a deduction. It's not just a normal charitable deduction. It's a super deduction that you get for doing this. So this is in place now in 17 states already, a version of this. Now, some places it's like 50%, like in Iowa, and I think in Indiana it's 50%. In other states like Georgia, it's 100%. So what happens in Georgia is, and I'm not sure how it's going to work here because they're still hammering this out. The legislature just went into session half an hour ago, and they're going to be hammering this out today. But what happens in Georgia in some places is that you give $1,000, that money comes right off the top of your state tax bill. You don't owe that money, so you're even. But it costs you nothing to do that. But people in Georgia are able to take that $1,000 and claim it as a charitable contribution on their federal income taxes. Meaning
you save twice.
Yeah. They make money. It's like a risk-free investment. And I wrote about this last week and described it. It's just a scam. Now, I'm not sure how the math works out with a 75% cut. But what's happened is that this has been sort of burbling in the background for the last month or two in these education talks. This is something that Republicans have wanted for a long time. They like vouchers. They like the idea that you would just give tax money to parents and let them spend it on whatever school they want, which sounds like a good idea, except you realize that this is money that's going to go to schools generally. So
you said sorry, and Suri thought she said Suri.
You know what? I think so.
Suri.
I think that's what happened. My Siri started talking.
Fringe with the Suri on top.
Anyway, so this idea has been out there, but the objection to it is that, you know, with vouchers, for instance, that you can't just give money to these people to spend on schools because that takes away money that we would spend on public schools, and then when you drain the money from public schools, the public schools get worse, and this ends up basically privatizing education. That seems to be the goal. Certainly Governor Rauner is very hostile to teachers' unions and other forms of public education. So the American Federation of Teachers, the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and things like that have been pushing back pretty strongly just in the last couple of days. But this debate has come kind of out of nowhere from most people. This was not something that was on anybody's radar screen during all these talks about Senate Bill 1.
Did this all happen accidentally, or did somebody mastermind this to play out this way?
I don't think it didn't happen accidentally, but I don't think it was any great chess game being played. I think what happened was that you had this bill, Senate Bill 1 was basically done. It was a bipartisan bill, but driven by Democrats.
Yeah.
State Senator Andy Menar from down in the Springfield area was the guy who's been championing this for a long time. So he comes up with this bill, and it's this long bill with all kinds of, you know, this and that, trying to get education funding, you know, on a proper footing in Illinois. What happens is that the state, by the according to the Constitution, the state is supposed to have primary responsibility for the funding of public education. But over the years, it's slipped from, you know, in the 40% to the 30% to the 20%. They're not funding education to the level they're supposed to. And what that means is that these wealthier districts do fine because they fund it through property taxes, which is why you suburbanites pay such high property taxes.
Oh, my
taxes.
God, yes.
But what happens is that property-poor neighborhoods have schools that are starving for money because the state hasn't done this. And this, so this has been vexing politicians in Illinois for years, because when you change the formula, some schools win and some schools don't. Some districts win, some districts lose. They worked out this elaborate plan where nobody would lose. It's called hold harmless, where, you know, where everyone gets the same amount of money, but the poor schools are going to get more. And then Chicago's got this issue with the teacher pensions. It's a very big, complex piece of legislation with lots of moving parts. The governor vetoed it with a really long veto message with a lot of moving parts on it. And so looking for compromise here, what seems to have happened, no one is exactly clear on the details, but what seems to have happened is that the governor and the Republicans have given in on most of the things the Democrats wanted in exchange for this scholarship, this tax credit scholarship program. And so right now we're in a situation where, do the Democrats swallow hard and take this? And it's something that hasn't – it's a big step.
Sure.
Because you're really changing, you know, sort of a fundamental philosophical view on how public education is supposed to work, and saying we're going to put it's a $75 million fund is the original thing, so it's not unlimited, and it's going to be sunset after 5 years, and it seems to me that this is going to be the way they're going to come to compromise, because as you've been probably following here, there's a chance that some schools aren't going to open, or they're going to open and have to close in a couple weeks, because state funding hasn't come through, and this is part of the budget compromise that they had earlier in the year, which was that all this stuff had to be, that you had to pass school funding reform in order to get the schools funded. And so right now they're at this moment where they really have to act. And so this is we're going to get this without a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about whether it's the right thing to do.
This reminds me, and we have to take a break, so we'll talk about it after the break, of a political commercial that I keep seeing that has a strange ending that I want to ask you about. That'll come up next. Stick around. It's Bill Leffin and Wendy Snyder, along with Eric Zorn from the Tribune on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. He has also been laser printed. Eric, a quick question. A couple of weeks ago, we had this sweetened beverage tax. Nobody seemed too thrilled with it, but it's been forced upon us. So about a week ago, I saw this commercial for the first time, and I've seen it a dozen times since, almost once or twice a day, where they show you the importance of the sweetened beverage tax, and they say, if your child is drinking just one soft drink per day, one can of pop per day, that equals 10 extra pounds per year. And they're just showing how, from a health standpoint, you know, sugary beverages are the worst thing you can do for your kid. And then at the very end, I see that it's been paid for by Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City. What's in this for Michael Bloomberg? Why would he be paying for this ad?
Well, Bloomberg has been... he's sort of a busybody about stuff like this. Remember, he was the guy who was trying to limit the size of drinks that you could buy in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he was also got involved in Robin Kelly's, Congresswoman Robin Kelly's campaign, because he's really in the anti-gun thing. So he was promoting that. So it's not unlike him to get involved in this kind of thing. And he's in favor of this kind of control over sweetened beverages. That I was struck by. And just following up on that, Tony Preckwinkle seems to have said that she reached out to him for some help on this.
Oh, maybe that's the help she reached out for.
And she reached out for that. But this idea of drinking one can of soda a year gains 10 pounds.
I don't believe that.
I don't think that's how weight gain works exactly. How many calories in a can?
It's calories in, calories out. I mean, really, and exercise, it all matters. One can of soda is probably what? 120 calories,
right? And everybody.
No, I bet more. It's got to be more.
Right, and of course, everybody's metabolism is different
sure.
than that. And sure. you don't know if you drink a can of soda, maybe you don't have the cupcake, or maybe you have them both. I don't know.
Right,
but
in my case,
I would have them both. Yes.
I like Michael Bloomberg a lot. I couldn't figure out why.
150 calories.
Is it 150? Yeah.
I don't know what I said.
You said 120. So we're,
yeah, 150. One can, 12 fluid ounces.
Close.
So, but I couldn't figure out, and I know he wanted restrictions in New York when he was mayor of New York, but I wouldn't know why he'd want to be active in our situation here in Illinois with this.
Well, I think it's just a cause that he has. He believes in the cause, and he thinks it's healthy for the people of New York, he thinks it's healthy for the people of Chicago and Cook County, and so he's getting involved. He's a very rich man, and he decided not to run for president a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
If you remember, they talked about him maybe running, and he didn't see a path as an independent candidate because he's a Republican turned Democrat or Democrat turned Republican. I know his party affiliation is kind of vague.
Yeah.
So he's in there, and yeah, his idea is that this is a good thing. And as a matter of public health, it was a good idea to stop to lower people's consumption of sugar beverages. There's no question about that. I mean, really the question becomes, like, what's the mechanism for that? And is this mechanism, you know, is it the proper size? And is it fair? Is it
After beverages? Why didn't they attack cookies, cakes,
yes,
candy,
potato chips,
any of that? Why beverages?
Well, my argument would be that you could take a tax like this against, you know, fattening foods or whatever and spread it out.
Mayonnaise.
So that it's not. No, well, wait a minute.
I love
it. Hold it.
You don't want that.
Hold it now. I got too far.
The Hellman's tax? Thanks.
I've just changed sides on this. No, I mean, seriously, you could
things that aren't of nutritional value could be taxed.
You could generate a sugar tax. You could probably generate, you know, there are ways to do this. It seems like targeting this one particular kind of indulgence and then taxing it in a very high way. I mean, one of the things that's causing this thing to be so unpopular is that you see it on your receipt. And, you know, you buy a 2-liter bottle of root beer, and you see on your receipt that you're paying an extra, 67 cents or something like that?
Which, for a one-time thing, if you go run to McDonald's and get a Diet Coke, it used to be a dollar, and it's $1.16 now. Big deal. That doesn't break me. But when you're going to have a party or you're getting soda somewhere and you're buying a bunch of cases of it, oh, my God, does that
add up.
Well,
yesterday morning on Rick Pearson's show on WGN, they had someone from the, I think it was the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, was talking about what was going on in the borders, in the Cook County border areas, where people, you know, you live close enough, you can just go across into DuPage or up into Lake County and buy your soda. And so what happens is that people go, well, if I'm going to go, you know, over to Elmhurst to buy soda, I might as well do my grocery shopping there. And this is apparently having a fairly serious impact, especially closer to the borders. Less of an impact the closer you get to downtown, but the closer you are to the border. And so, and the reason is because it is, as Wendy points out, if you're going to be buying a case or having a party, it kind of starts adding up. You think, well, I could save some money here doing that.
Right.
So people are resisting. And I don't know how they're feeling about at restaurants and so on, whether people are ordering.
I talked about it the week it went into effect, how I went to a Mariano's near me, and my drink of choice is almost always club soda. That's what I drink more of than anything. And there was a big sign by the Canada Dry saying, "We regret to inform you that because of the sweetened beverage tax, you'll be paying an additional, you know, amount for this." And I can't figure out why club soda would be part of it. It's just water.
It shouldn't.
And CO2.
It's wrong. It should not.
Did you call them?
No.
You should have sued them. You should have.
I'm gonna sue them.
You should have had a hunger strike. You should have sued. No, you. I mean, seriously, you should not have had to pay that on club soda.
I don't think so.
Although I think tonic water, you do have to pay it on, because tonic.
Because there's quinine in there, and that's
it's well, there's corn syrup.
See, yeah. I would drink
quinine. You don't have to pay quinine.
The quinine tax.
I can't drink club soda because they wouldn't let me into the club.
You're not in the club?
It's a very high standard.
That's not fair.
You had Zanies this week?
It's the bubbly Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. It's always a great read. Eric, thank you very much for being here. We'll see you not next week, but in 2 weeks.
In two weeks,
great. More Eric Zorn. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.